Well, hello and welcome to Inexos Access All Areas. My name is Bea and I will be co-hosting this series of podcasts with my Inexos nerd Hayden Murdoch. We will be delving deep with you all to explore everything there is to know about this iconic band of brothers Inexos, sharing music, tours, videos, albums and oh so much more.
Well, hello, welcome to Inexos Access All Areas, episode 186, the podcast that aims to dive deep into all things great about our favourite band. I say this very regularly, don't I, B? But I'm going to welcome you first, our patrons second, our greater audience third, and anybody else who's discovering us for the first time. How are you? Someone's got four or five more sleeves before they get on a plane. Is that right?
Yes, I have. I can't wait. Very uber excited about it. It's all coming together. Visas, passports, birth certificates. It's been quite a journey.
A little panic feeling now where you go, oh my God, the days are counting down and the things I need to accomplish before I go are increasing.
No, everything's coming together. It's just, I just don't need any more moving parts, that's all.
Correct.
But I'm really looking forward to this show. I think you've got something, some homework or something for some people.
We do. But hey, how good was last week with John Lamoureux from America, where I guess two worlds collided, the meeting of two podcasts. It was good fun, wasn't it?
It was really good. It was about time we met John in person. He is so lovely and enthusiastic. Yes. About all bands, but mainly about our Inexos. And that was a really good, fun show to do. And I know that a lot of you listeners out there got back in touch with us and enjoyed that show.
And what a great voice. Like, what a great voice for audio type of transmission. I always find Americans are very well-spoken, articulate type people, you know, if I could not sound too patronising. But, you know, John's ability to, you know, articulate and recall and just a great vocal range of voice, you know, could be easily on West Coast FM, I think, reading out classic rock top 10 of the 80s. You know, he's got that great voice, hasn't he?
He's got an amazing voice. And you know what? I didn't have to edit too much of his and ahs, Hayden.
No.
This episode, you are going to really try not to do that today, are you?
Absolutely. John played me on a break with the ums and ahs, so I will attempt to not be anywhere near that sort of level of my normal side of things. But I did want to give a little quick early shout-out to John Jamin, speaking of another John, who did a little post that's gone a little bit viral on our platforms and others from the Cleveland Rock Hall of Fame, and yes, gave a shout-out to our podcast, but also, more importantly, the Inexos omission thus far from the Rock Hall of Fame. Great little post there. Thank you, John, for that. And we hope things like that just are another little granular sort of building block for an ocean and a tsunami of inductions to come. So,
And another American with a great voice as well. It looked great. So thank you, John. That was great footage.
Now, what's come across your Inexos week, Bea? Because I guess you're preparing to go to the UK. You've got an Inexos cover sort of gig I think you're attending over there. But anything particularly this last couple of weeks that have come across your desk?
I'm going to keep my mouth completely closed on any conversations that I've been having backstage of the podcast. But that'll be tantalising you all, that when we come back, we'll have quite a lot to go through. But if, like Hayden just said, I am going to the Fake Festival in Bedford in the UK on the 25th of May, which is a Saturday. It's a whole day affair. In a big marquee, so it doesn't matter if it's raining. If you see me, I'll be wearing my Inexos t-shirt. If you're a fan, come over. I have free bracelets to give out to anybody who wants to come and say hello.
Excellent. Now, we've some patrons in the UK. Have you got any plans to catch up with them or any intersections going to be crossed?
I'm definitely meeting up with Carrie Ann.
Yes.
We're meeting in Paris, and then she's coming back over to London with us. So definitely meeting up with her. Manny, I'm hoping to, and maybe Joe Robbins too, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it'd be nice.
Big shout out to Manny and his book. We may even be able to get him on the Hustle podcast with John that came up last week. I don't know if you've mentioned that to Manny yet, but I'm sure we'd love to get a US interview out to promote his book.
Fantastic. I hope so. That would be good to hear. It'd be a bit of a deep dive on Manny's book, wouldn't it?
That's right. Now, we've got a big show today, but a punchy one. We're going to do a shout-out to all of our patrons who make this podcast happen. So over to you, B.
I'd like to say hello to everybody outside on the highway. Let's all say hello to everybody outside. It's about 10,000 people at least. Hello.
Well, hello to our honorary members, Tim Farris, Nick Egan, Mark Opitz, Richard Simpkin, Cameron Adams, Mary Woods, Darren Jones, Paul Jolie, our patrons, Carmen, Laurie, Carrie-Anne, Danielle, Sarah Markham, Sarah Camier, Dr. Jim, Katie, Lisa Mack, Anne-Marie, Susan P., Pedro, and Mandy. Happy birthday, Amanda H., Amanda V., David, Paul, Ella, Ryder, Tony, Erica, Abigail, Martin, Jim, Jackie, Sheila, Shannon, Brett, Suzanne, Laurel, Bard, Genevieve, Shelby, Manny, Laurie, and Jill, Heidi, Paula, Lisa, Nancy, Juliet, Scott, Anthea, Maria, Tracy, Vernon, Jamie, Diane, Stefan, Andrew, Georgie, Stephen, happy birthday, Keisha, Mark, Vern, Mandy Jane, Nick, happy birthday, Sula, Amy, Diane, Paul P, Paul B, Alicia, Jay, John, Anne Barrett, Kathy, Chantel, Neil, Mary Ellen, Giuliano, and Darren Joseph. And our special mentions are to Sue D, Joe Robbins, happy birthday, John A. Vink, Michael Spriggs, Glenn Davis, Paul Boozy, and our gorgeous Helen Kirkwood. Welcome to the podcast, everybody.
All right, well, this is the part where we do a little bit of a topic hint, B, and we are at that part of the NXS anthology where we're going to be discussing the setup and the announcement and just that preamble to Rockstar NXS, which has been something that I guess has been there in the offing for a while, but we are at that point now where we're going to go through that that particular sort of process that set up that show. And in future episodes, we're going to be talking a little bit about I guess, you know, the contestants and the selection process with JD. And got some very interesting sort of information that I think the listeners should find quite enlightening. But also importantly, what I did want to hint be at this early juncture is that going back to watching some of that particular show, it was so refreshing and revealing just seeing great rock, you know, pop music that had credibility being played in the mainstream media, which, you know, sadly, some 18, 19 years later, you can't get a decent sort of song on a TV show, let alone sort of a show that highlights, you know, great music as it is. And, you know, it's probably one of the takeaways I've had from going back and watching, you know, the series B, that some of this great music that was put on for audiences around the world was really embraced at the time. But we don't have as many forums to play that music anymore. I know you were at Top of the Pop School growing up. I was a Countdown guy here in Australia, and we had the Top 40 Casey Kasem in America. But Rockstar NXS might have been one of the last shows where great rock, you know, classic music was played to a wide audience.
Oh, don't forget we had The Tube.
Yeah,
we had quite a lot of magazines.
The key word you said there is we had. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not in the UK anymore, but I'm sure we have something.
So looking forward to tackling sort of the Rockstar sort of period there. And look, we'll, like everything, give it a good forensic sort of once we get into it in the topic today. But B, what's the time for now?
It's time for the news.
Hi, this is Darren Joseph from Perth, Western Australia, and you're listening to the number one NXS podcast, Access All Areas. And now it's time for the news.
All right. Well, obviously, some great news, been basically over the last 24 hours, just unearthing all the little things in the last 3-4 weeks that have built up from a news perspective. The Swing, as we all know, we celebrated its 40th anniversary, but pleasingly on YouTube now, there's a great, you know, The Swing and the B-sides. And had a bit of a play today before coming on, checking out some of the B-sides, like songs like The Harbour, that I couldn't even remember much back to a youngster. But that's a really, really cool sort of add-on to YouTube at the moment. Also, too, the National Film and Sound Archive, which is a very famous sort of heritage body here in Australia, an oral history excerpt from The Swing that Andrew does in a 2015 interview talking about the origins of The Swing. There was also, I think, a Molly Meldrum / Michael interview that was on our socials recently talking about that particular era. And it's great going back to sort of listen to sort of interviews of that period, all reflections of that period that were there. So the National Film and Sound Archive are doing their bit for that. Just before recording today, B, I listened to a radio sort of interview that Andrew did with Claire and Lisa, which is a radio show, and they had a big sort of retrospective on the year 1984. So if you go to May the 10th, it's about a 20-minute interview. But Andrew's in ripping form on that, and he does reveal a nugget or two, B, that he has a new album that's all written and about to basically go into the recording studio. The album's going to be called The Prospector. It'll probably be a similar vein in terms of his sort of country roots and things. But that particular album's going to be coming out at some point in the next 6 months, I believe. Additional to that, a couple other cool articles. There's a great article, In Excess, A Journey Through Time, with Oz Rock Icons, and it's on the official Goth Radio platform. Now, I didn't really associate In Excess with goth, so that makes a great read, and I just read that earlier this morning, so do yourself a favour. Also, too, there's another great article out there called American Songwriter, or publication, that is, and the heading is Three Ways Rogers, that is Nile Rogers, made Original Sin one of In Excess's most enduring hits. Enough in the search engine there to find that, but that's an excellent read and one that, again, is timely with the swing period. Moving forward, B, there's a lot of those great little first reaction videos. I was thinking to myself, why do I like these first reaction videos? And to me, it is. It's seeing the eyes and the glow and the enthusiasm of people discovering what we know, how good they were. And I think that's sort of something that comes across in those. So first one is that I would recommend. It's called First Time Hearing, and they've put two out there. One is For Good Times, another one is New Sensation. There's another one called Bliss Fix, which is a first reaction to New Sensation live at Wembley. The girl on that's fantastic. She's, I think, French or German. She has a really good sort of interaction there, seeing Michael and the crowd bobbling up and down. So I urge to people to check those out. But B, your friend and the interview you did, Lee Francis, a friend of the podcast, have you seen his little post in April on Instagram?
Has he found it, the rap?
Yes.
He talked about it on the show.
It's the Lee Francis rap, and he does a little rap, and he talks about...
With Tim.
Yeah, so you probably just talked about that on the show, on the episode, but him and Chris Murphy and Tim found themselves in a hotel room or something. So he replayed the rap in himself, doing it.
Oh, right. It's not the time.
Probably not the time. Or
okay.
He's reliving it, I think, and doing it as well. So
funny.
He's a very jovial, very passionate Northern NXS fan, isn't he?
It's amazing. I hope to get to see him. That would be fun.
And he's still sort of obviously there on V Radio, there, Virgin Radio, isn't he, in the UK?
I think it's finished his radio show because he went on tour afterwards. So I think he's kicking about a bit at the moment. So that's why I'm hoping I might get to see him.
Okay. Also, too, shout out to the petition. They're up to 17,300.
Yay.
So we thought we'd give that a little
congratulations.
And they have cool little sort of snippet videos and little podcasts occasionally they steal and little excerpts from things.
You better mention those guys now.
Okay. Well, you mentioned them because you're big dealing with them.
Oh, gosh, I've got to find out what their real
name is. There was a podcast with Denny Hines on, and then I think the guys at the petition took a little excerpt and played it, and we probably deleted it off our socials as we'd like to get Denny on ourselves. But the petition does have great little sort of little 3-minute blogs, and the David Lee Roth one's my favourite.
from the In Excess induct page. Yes, great. Just giving a little shout out to Chartbeat's Journey Through Pop. Yeah, well done, guys. You did a nice interview with Denny Hines.
Yeah, a little RIP here for two things. One, something sort of animate, and the other one, something, you know, human. But Steve Albini, who was a very famous producer and engineer, probably claim to fame as working on Nevermind. Actually, sorry, Neutero, I think, for Nirvana. But did a lot of work with the Pixies, did a lot of work with that sort of soft, loud type sort of mix, and really created multiple tracking of guitars and layers and things, and a very big sound. He passed away last week, and, you know, there's some really good articles going around the internet about his achievements and career, so I would urge people to check those out. But, you know, only in his early 60s, so gone too soon. And also to a venue, B, the Coogee Bay Hotel has been given its last rights. It's been lobbied to be heritage listed, but unfortunately it's going to be torn down for developers. This place is probably more known for the band room and the band room area called Salinas, which In Excess quite famously played around the Shabu Shabar time. I think the black and white video is really the one they play at Salinas there as the fourth single off the album. I have sort of seen that whole gig there, you know, on MTV many years ago. But Salinas is a very famous place, been around for over 50 years. I believe the Killers played a secret show there, B, when they toured in 2018. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really sad that the venue is been given its last rights and will move to developers. And again, another place where live vital music is now no longer. So RIP Salinas and Coogee Bay Hotel. On more positive news, two musical icons. One, Bono. I know people love to hate, but, you know, great musician, obviously, and great frontman. Turned 64 in the last week. So I guess, you know, imagine him and Michael together if they were around today, both when they're 64 on stage singing. And, you know, when I'm 64, imagine that. That'd be pretty cool. We could probably always GPT that, couldn't we? You know,
maybe.
And also another guy who's a real sort of hero of mine in the music scene. It's a guy called Graham Goldman. Now people don't know the name so much, but he's one of the founders and musical architects behind 10cc and everything they did. But this was a guy when he was 18 or 19 was drafted over to America to go to a lot of those Tin Pan Alley recordings booths and just write songs for other artists. And he wrote songs for the Hollies, you know. He wrote songs for the Yardbirds. One of the famous ones was For Your Love. Was the first top 10 hit for the Yardbirds. He was a great song for hire guy and wrote many hits before 22, 23 and then set up the band 10cc with his colleagues. So he's 78. That's a big shout out to him. And also just in closing, fantastic news. The Mystified documentary for Richard Lowenstein has just been given a streaming platform in America on Peacock. So that's going to be played soon. And also to one of our listeners who shared with us on our socials that the song Mystify was in one of the TV shows.
It's my daughter.
Yellow. Was it your daughter who did that?
Yeah, Mila messaged me. I was lying in bed.
Yeah, they've got
posters. Mom, I'm watching.
In Yellow Jackets, I think, isn't it? The TV show. So
one of her favourites.
Big shout out to Mila there and also to that show for putting a great song in there. B, a chunky news section, and you've got one more little item to add.
I have. Thank you to Danielle. We've got a very sad one to end on. The legendary producer and actor Roger Corman, who had an extensive list of movies, and one was under his belt, was Frankenstein Unbound. And we know that Michael Hutchence played the role of Percy Shelley.
Yes. Alex Preuss posted that yesterday, and I replied to that to Alex going, yeah, you know, he's one of those famous sort of schlock sort of 50s, 60s, 70s directors, but trained so many great directors and went on to do amazing work. But yeah, you know, big shout out to that because, I guess not only the NXS link, but also the contribution.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. That's the news of the week.
Hey, this is Tim Farris. Big shout out to Hayden and B. Also want to say hello to all the listeners and NXS fans. Thanks for listening. I love you, Hayden and B. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
And now it's time for Topic of the Week.
All right, B. Well, Rockstar NXS, a very controversial period for the band after the controversy of some 7 years of Michael passing away. This is an interesting sort of deep dive because it does sort of represent this next chapter in the band's sort of history where between 2001 and 2003, the band were, I wouldn't say meandering, but they were really sort of, I guess, you know, not, you know, they were ships without sort of, a destination. They'd road tested everybody from Susie DiMarchi. They'd done some gigs a couple years earlier than that with Terence Trent D'Arby, as we discussed. You know, John Stevens got involved. They were touring, they were doing lots of, best of and greatest hits albums coming out, but they probably did lack a direction as to sort of which way they would go. And ultimately when, you know, John finished up, you know, with NXS there, it wasn't that long after that there was an announcement that the band would be looking towards, you know, creating sort of a reality show that ultimately was called Rockstar NXS.
Live from Los Angeles, the global search that rocks the world. Star World presents Rockstar NXS.
Do you have much memory of this period? I know you were a little bit off radar a little bit, but you probably were in Australia, I believe, at this point, or close to this point in 2004?
Well, yeah, I just arrived and I said to my friends, where's NXS? I had no idea.
Right.
And they went, well, they're mainly in Sydney, but they've all just gone to America to do a show. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
So that's where you and them were. But before you even start, though, I don't know whose brainchild this was because it's very conflicting whose idea the actual show was.
Well, look, I mean, you know, the band themselves and Kurt probably has claimed that it was his sort of idea. Now, you know, you've obviously maybe have some information that's contrary to that or additional to that.
I think David Edwards also thinks that he did it too. Yeah. It was his idea.
Well, look, often success has many authors and failure has many orphans. So who's to say, who's to know? I know, look, Kirk, obviously, the band have cited him as somebody who was involved in that. And even when Dave was with the band as a manager at the time and band members themselves, it was talked about in those early interviews from Kirk's point of view that it was an idea that he had and took it to the band or thought it was an idea to happen. Because I guess there's a bit of a backdrop to this particular sort of period, B. We'd probably come out of the 80s, 90s or whatever there in terms of TV viewing. If we actually look at TV viewing habits, the 80s was about the big soap operas, weren't they? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you know, you remember the Dallas's and the Dynasties and the dramas and all those type of sort of shows. You know, as the 90s progressed, there was a format change. Younger people habits sort of formulate what TV viewers start to follow. In the late 90s, you know, I think the pop star show came in maybe around 99. Idol around 2000, 2001 started to sort of come into the consciousness. You had kitchen reality shows. Suddenly, you know, the average punter in the public thought that they could be on TV. And there was a gentleman in the UK, I'm South Africa born, I think, but Mark Burnett. He was probably the king of the reality sort of genre. And, you know, when you throw in our friend Donald Trump, The Apprentice, which was a huge show in around 2004, you know, you had this sort of juggernaut where maybe, as I said, Kirk and the band or whatever thought, well, maybe we could sort of, you know, have a marketing exercise and a brand exercise as well as a band exercise.
I think it all started with the Big Brother episodes, didn't it?
Yeah,
I remember that was massive when it started in the UK.
Yeah, and they were probably around sort of 97, 98, weren't they? They were before the Idol shows, absolutely. Yeah. But I think, you know, this notion of interacting audiences, you know, as both contestants and being on TV, they became the stars, but they became front and centre. And we only see it grow to these particular days now with our classic shows like Married at First Sight and all these type of things.
Were you going on one of those, Hayden?
Guilty. I do watch that. It's my one short show to be in. But look, I think, as I said, the band probably looked at it and thought, okay, well, we're going to go on. They probably made that decision. We will be an entity. We are going to find a new singer. Why don't we film the process of doing it and make it as an exercise? I do remember where I first was when it was announced. I remember being in my living room in West Melbourne. The news was on, and I don't know if they were going to a break or they were announcing the news sort of highlights coming up in a few minutes' time or whatever, but they said INXS band are launching an international search for a new singer as of 2005. This at this point in time was December 2004, but they're going to launch a 2005 international search, which will be filmed in July in America, blah, 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 blah. And it sort of threw me because I was like, wow, okay, this is something different. You know, what was my first feeling reaction was, one, hey, they're doing something great. They're going to go on great. Did I associate reality shows with a bit kitschy, you know, cheesy, you know, schmaltzy? Yes, and that was probably a stigma that may, to this day, still is held by many. I think the show itself, and we're going to get into this on future episodes, the show itself did, as I alluded to earlier, provide a forum for essentially just take away the schmaltz. It gave a great forum for fantastic music to be played and up-and-coming contestants to sing it. And you compare it to some of these other shows these days, you couldn't say the same thing. The notion of the show gave the band renewed vigour and it gave them a goal. It was not lost on me once they started filming. The band were in shape. They looked fit. They looked healthy. And they looked suntanned. I think I even remember reading as a lead up to it that they were put through some fitness and to make sure they looked photogenic on TV, because they, at 2005, if we look at, say, Gary, who's the oldest, okay, 1957, come 2005, he would have been turning 48. You would have had Andrew turning 46 around that time. John would have been 44, Kirk, you know, maybe 40, 46. So they were in their sort of early middle 40s. And again, you know, that's not what you would call prime time, photogenic, soaring, you know, fertile period of a band. So I think the production values of the band had to get into shape and had to sort of, I guess, looked upon as a viable exercise because, yeah, rewind 10 years ago, B, you know, they were pretty sort of good-looking specimens running around on the Welcome to Wherever You Are covers, and they didn't have Michael anymore, front and centre, who was the allure of the band. So from a production values point of view, they had to probably, you know, naturally be in shape and be looked as a vital, energetic entity. as this sort of competition was about to be
announced. I did find that the styling was really on point. Definitely yes. On point. They weren't like trying to look young. They looked age appropriate. Yeah. It still looked pretty hot.
Look, but the director didn't actually zoom in too much, you know, front and close. But you're right on that aspect. So that's a little bit of the backdrop of the show. The second part I want to talk about is just the process of just sort of, you know, how the setup was to be. For those who didn't see it at the time, or those who are about to go back and embark on it, or those who are just curious to know about the structure. Well, Mark Burnett was the executive producer. They got some fantastic directors in, and, you know, the production values of the setup were brilliant. They got two hosts in, the sort of the musical cred host. They got Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction, which was a really inspired choice because Dave is excellent in front of the camera. He's got that rock cred being from Jane's Addiction, which are one of those all-time bands. He's a great orator. He is a great enunciator, you know, of content, and he gave credibility to that part of the show. They got Brooke Birkin as more of the hostess, if you're bold to define it as that. She was really sort of the introducer, sort of the person who joined the dots together. She had previously been on Baywatch. She was an actress, you know, very glamorous lady, you know, great personality. Use the word rockers a little bit too much when introducing everybody, you know, our rockers and things like that, but that's a minor point. The setup really was that first 6 months or 4 or 5 months of 2005, though, the band themselves were doing these auditions. So they were going around the globe into the major continents between the UK and Europe and Australia and America, and essentially pruning a list down to sort of 15 contestants, to which would then ultimately be on the show once it aired. I guess when the show did air, you got to see some footage and some historical content of that. Often when you compare it to the Idol type format, often those auditions amongst people are the funniest part. Pleasingly, they didn't go into that shticky sort of thing where they spent too much time making fun of people. I think that's one thing this show didn't do. It didn't sort of seek to make fun of people.
Yeah.
Mm. It had a sense of a credibility, even if the notion was incredible to some. The audition process and the way they went about it was quite credible in finding viable, you know, front people to essentially front the band. And I think the blend of contestants between male and female showed the band were serious about whether it could be a male or a female singer. Susie DiMarchi had done some vocals at one of the gigs in Adelaide. Shirley Manson, I think, was considered, but she was pretty much taken up with garbage duties, as in the band, not as in rubbish removal. But Andrew also additionally was writing songs in different keys because a female vocalist has different keys and ranges. So he was writing material and the same song in different key levels to accommodate the possible outcome of a female winner. Again, there was quite a lot going on sort of behind the scenes to make this a possibility. When the show did air, I remember it was, I think, July 11th in 2005, and it went all the way through to the September 20th. I remember working in Ballarat at the time, and it was on Australian Network TV on Foxtel. So the benefit of Foxtel, you did get, you know, 3 or 4 repeats per night. So I remember driving home from Ballarat, which is about 100 kilometres from Melbourne, 120 kilometres, and missed the first airing of the first episode, but they played it again an hour later. But I just remember being quite excited because I felt the band were doing something that was proactive rather than reactive. Was I nervous about the show? Absolutely. I remember the opening episode, and we'll talk about some of this stuff later, but I do remember the contestants being up at this beautiful big mansion called the Paramore Mansion, and they were showing them going into this particular mansion, and then they could hear this music, which was In Excess inside, playing What You Need with Dave Navarro on guitar. And they all come inside and they're all got their fists in the air. And I thought, oh, okay, I think this show is going to be pretty cool.
In just 3 months, one of you is going to be the new lead singer of In Excess. Now, I know you guys hear that sweet music that's coming from inside the house, right? Obviously, it's In Excess. But what you guys don't know is that there's somebody inside jamming with them who's going to play an important role in your rock star journey.
So I remember that particular sort of scene in the first episode sort of alleviating my fears, and I thought, oh, this is going to be pretty cool. All up in terms of the structure, there was 32 episodes in total. They had a fantastic house band made up of five guys, and they were really tight and very good, you know, players. Eventually that house band went on tour with Paul Stanley from Kiss, I think, on his solo tour a couple of years later, because he rated their ability to play other material so strong and good. And think about it, this house band were playing such a variety of songs each night. They had to be really, really capable of that stuff. In terms of finalists, as I said, they got down to sort of 15, and effectively from the very first episode, they were going to eliminate someone. So I guess that band who, the elimination process I'll go through soon, was definitely going to challenge and test people out, like a lot of these shows do. Initially, the ratings they were okay, but then, you know, they're doing a half an hour episode on a Monday, an hour on a Tuesday, and then half an hour on Wednesday. So it was like three nights in a row. I think the Monday night episode didn't rate so well, and that's a pretty big night against American football and other types of sports. They decided to move the Monday night episode onto VH1, which is a different carrier. But it was really interesting. Over time, it really did build up a good ratings following, and the critics actually liked the format of the show. And I remember seeing the ratings figures and, you know, diving deep on them, and they really started to grow, and it was winning particularly its time slots between the 18-year-old and 49 demographic, which is where the money is for advertisers. It did very well. In terms of the format within, the 30-minute episode that they did the start off was more of a sort of a tutorial behind the scene. You got to know the contestants, you know, what they were facing going into the challenges and preparing some of their material. The second episode of each sort of weekly format was an hour performance where they all had to get up and form a song in front of the band and effectively be measured on that and given critiques on that. Again, highs, lows, maybes, you know, there were some really interesting performances. Some, I remember, you know, where you could see Andrew was a bit exasperated going, okay, trying to find something positive to say and struggling. And there were some exceptional ones to this day that, you know, I sometimes still in my downtime go and check out, and we'll explore that furtherly. And then the third episode of each week was a 30-minute elimination episode where they were basically saying, you know, you have to, you know, head off to Oblivion and you're not right for our band, you know, In Excess or whatever. So that was sort of the general format. You had that three sort of episodes. In that mansion there, what's quite interesting, B, where it was set up, is that mansion's also the scene of a very famous Hollywood movie called H2O or Halloween, the 1998 reboot of the Halloween franchise.
Okay.
Also a place where Britney Spears did a film clip for My Prerogative, her cover of Bobby Brown. And it's also a place where My Chemical Romance has done film clips and other TV shows have been played. So it's a pretty iconic old mansion from, I think, 1923. It's a beautiful old Mediterranean sort of setup
there. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
In terms of the music, B, just as a sort of generic side of things, some of the artists that they got to play, now, they had sort of the contestants get up and sing songs from Radiohead, you know, particularly a song like Creep, Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, John Lennon's Imagine, Alanis Morissette, Hand in My Pocket, The Killers, Mr. Brightside, Cold as Ice for Foreigner, I think Everlong by Foo Fighters, Franz Ferdinand, Take Me Out, they had Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit. They had lots of these sort of very iconic sort of songs that were played. And I think to the listening audience out there, they had a live audience in the crowd, but, you know, the greater public, you know, watching the show, that was an appealing thing to check that type of music out and that type of sort of format there. Now, your experiences there, did you see the show much, or did you know what was going on with it? Where were you at the time, sort of once it was sort of starting to emerge, or you just heard about the outcome more so at that time? I know you were a young mum at that time, you know?
No, I didn't get to watch it, and I still haven't watched all of it. I've watched, like, the good bits.
Okay. What do you remember? What stands out for you?
Well, the standout was that they all lived together, didn't they?
The contestants, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this was probably a bit of a first after, like, a big brother thing. And yeah. I remember thinking, this is so wildly styled, and they were made to feel like rock stars straight away with the silk covers on the beds, and you know, the decor was just like over the top, and the food and everything, and it just like really wanted to watch it because it looked so watchable.
Live from Los Angeles, the global search that rocks the world, Star World presents Rockstar in Excess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's really the setup there of the show and just the structure and just how everything's sort of played around. And we're going to fill out the filling to this cake in a couple of extra episodes. This might be a three, maybe even a four-parter where we break this thing down, because it won't just be about the show itself. It'll be a bit about the band and, you know, the crafting, the album switch, and just a lot of little interesting things that we think that our core listenership out there may not know about. So looking forward to doing that. Also would like to sort of break down some really interesting information about some of the contestants and some of the key moments in the episodes. As you may know, and some of our listeners I've mentioned to over time, I was fortunate enough to go to one of the filmings and got a first-hand understanding of that, you know, production side and how they filmed it and recorded it, and just even that selection process. I remember when we were at one of the elimination episodes, and they literally went off for about 45 minutes to decide like who was going to be eliminated. It wasn't sort of, you know, cookie cutter, 3-minute ad break, come back. They really considered it. Looking forward to sort of fleshing that out a little bit more. I guess what we wanted to do, and as a lot of our listeners do know, B, is that you're going to the UK. So we're going to have about a 3-week gap between this episode and the next one. But we thought this would be a really handy first time phenomenon to give our listeners some homework and ask you now, through all your streaming and all your, you know, your YouTubes, you can actually download this, even on YouTube, and you can go watch it. Now, whether you want to watch all 32 episodes is up to you, but it would make the next episode you listen to more informative for you and more relatable if you do go off over the next 3 weeks and immerse yourself in it. And I would take this approach, because this is the approach that I took back in 2005, and that was 50% of me were like, oh my God, no, a reality show. Everything that I was sort of, you know, my sort of musical moral compass was against, all right, and these little facile sort of, you know, reality shows. But I subjected myself to it because it was INXS and I was loyal to the band. And we all know the outcome of the show and what happened with Switch and everything from there on and the hit with Pretty Vegas. But go back and watch it and go immerse yourself in it as an experience, because, you know, we are into binge watching now. Back then we weren't into binge watching. It was more episodic and it was more look forward to something. You can go back and really, you know, watch this on a binge type level. Watch 4 or 5, 6 episodes, you know, a day. You can knock it off in a week. And I can guarantee you, as a show and as a spectacle, it really does still stand up and stack up. And I think the show, out of all of that type of reality type of format, was creditably done with the way, you know, as I said, it was produced and the format and selection process and the song material and the house band and Dave Navarro and the host. I think it had great production values. So even as an enjoyable exercise, I reckon you could go back and watch it and actually enjoy it for what it is. But go back with a critical lens, go back with an open lens, go back and check it out, because, as I said, the next couple of episodes will make more sense to you if you have. It actually is enjoyable. You know, if you park INXS on one side, it actually was an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, the bits that I've seen are really enjoyable. Yeah, I can't wait. And it's going to be homework for me as well in my downtime. I'm going to be, I don't know about the 32 episodes, Hayden, but I'll have a go.
Listen, for someone who binge watched the US version of The Office over Christmas, which was about 180 episodes, I watched it in 2-3 weeks. Like 32, with half of these being 30 minutes and half of them being an hour. This is a 1-week exercise for some of us. But, you know, go and embrace it. There's a girl on there I really loved called Jordis Unger. She was fantastic. She sings a version of John Lennon's Imagine that still gives me spine tingles to this day, because I was in the audience that night hearing it, and hearing her sort of sing it, I guess, you know, subsequent to that, still is fantastic. And, you know, you will get those little spine tingling moments, those real little rushes there, and there'll be some cringy stuff. But, yeah, as I said, over the next 3 weeks, we are having a little bit of a hiatus, as you're overseas.
And I just correct you there, Hayden, it's going to be 4 weeks.
Well, I'm saying 3 to sort of mitigate your trip, and hopefully it was 3. Right, 4 weeks. Jeez.
4 weeks, yeah.
Right, okay. Yes. Hope that listeners don't forget about it. So maybe this, is if you need your INXS fixed and you can't get it through Access All Areas, this will be the one that substitutes us, even if on that level B. Gives you a little INXS juice hit in the meantime.
Fantastic.
All right, B, that's part one of Rockstar INXS.
Hey, this is Paul Jolly from Sydney, and this is The Big Rap.
All Well, well, that's a wrap. You're going on an extending hiatus. We may do a international cross-pollination hello while you're over there, but we won't have an episode out for at least in the next 4 weeks. So I guess to our listeners, I would urge and just encourage people to go back and check out our back catalogue. We are officially 4 years old. I did want to sort of recommend a couple of episodes that are personal favourites of mine. If you are having a little bit of a fix-miss of our podcast, go back and check out the band interviews. You know, the Andrew Farris one with Mark Opitz one, you know, goes for a good couple of episodes. Can't encourage you enough on that particular one. We do also want to encourage people to go back and listen to the John Farris one. That was a real sort of special moment for us because John was the mystery in excess member that doesn't do as much press as the others. And also too, there's some that gave us some great joy. I think the Mark Pallington one, which was only recently, that gave us a real buzz in terms of that interaction with the phone call as well. Now, Bea, have you got a couple of episodes you want to encourage people to listen to?
It's not so much the episodes, but these episodes are broken sometimes into two. And I do know, looking at the downloads, that some people miss out on episode two of the interview. So yeah, if you enjoyed part one, definitely get on to part two. And also, we've got some videos out there on our YouTube channel.
And here's the thing too, I actually go back and often listen to you know, podcasts that are old, but I've listened to before, and I listen to them again 3 years later because I've forgotten half the things about it. So again, if you can put up with our voices, but forget all the stuff that the interviewee said, go back and have a listen to, you know, album reviews or, you know, maybe deep dive chats with interviewees. As I said, we've got 185, now 186 episodes to choose from, and we'll go encourage that.
And Hayden, we're going to give you some homework while I'm away.
Oh, okay.
Homework. Yeah. So I want to get some really good guests come in. I want a massive lineup ready. Yep. I want to come back because I will be very rested and I will be a girl on fire.
Well, there may be one or two guests I interviewed that you've had some feedback on and you've handled one my way, which we won't announce just yet, but it could be something very exciting. And that one looks like it could occur. If I do actually happen to snare a couple while you're away, I'll do them. I'll put them onto the OneDrive, the hard drive, or whatever drive it is, and we'll handle them to you when necessary.
And I'm going to be doing a few while I'm there. I forgot to tell you about that. So I'll let you know how they go too.
All right. Well, we're going to go out today as a bit of a tribute song to Rockstar NXS. The one thing I want to be able to do is share information that is a little bit unique. Now, we're going to fast track all the way to the end of the show, and we're going to go up with a song called Easy Easy, which was actually played the first time JD got up and sang with the band. Never made it to the album Switch, and it is a track not people would know much about. We're going to go out with this particular live track to the audience straight after JD was selected, called Easy Easy, and let that little nugget resonate. B, it's a goodbye from me. Enjoy your trip.
Thank you very much, and I'll see you in 4 weeks, and it's a goodbye from B. Bye, everybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce the all-new NXS, now complete with their new lead singer, JD Fortune. Here they are with the world premiere of Easy Easy.
Self-attentions, it's sexual. Now inhibitions, none at all.
Don't understand the fact that I better swing by. Caught up in all the heat, recognize me, she.
Cause you know exactly what you want.
So
we
never sympathize, never sympathize. Give it up, let it go, till the song hits the show. Oh.
This is the Dutchie, and you've been listening to In Excess, Access All Areas with Hayden and Bea.